Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are. And good morning. It's Friday, August 19th. Dad Shirt Friday. More about that in our 9 o'clock hour. Do our little coffee break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Luke Mathers is here as well on this Friday morning. Coming up this hour, Carolyn Fiddler, a national expert on state politics, live from the Netroots Nation Convention out in Pittsburgh, a gathering of progressive activists. In our third hour, Up North News reporter Christina Lori and some of the good news stories that she's been working on. First, weather-wise, we've talked about how it was going to be scattered in terms of, you know, whether rain fell and how much you'd get. And you know that during the show yesterday, I talked about how it was just raining to beat the band, like pretty much through the entire show. And then there was a break, and then there was an absolute monsoon in the early afternoon. And then there was a wave of light rain in the evening. Do you know what's in the rain bucket up here on Lake Wissota, Luke, at this point when all was said and done?
3.5 inches.
4.75 Ooh, inches.
I almost went 4.5.
The one during the show, 2 inches. Another 1.5 inches during that monsoon. And then a little bit more last night. But again, here's how scattered it is. Last I saw, and I didn't look at this deeply, but Eau Claire, the Eau Claire Airport, which is not even 10 miles down the road, said 0.9 inches. And now that might be a little old, but I didn't see a lot of other reports with that much rain. I think we just happened to be under one of those cells. So I'm really enjoying that after the rain, it's all bright and green. So for the first time here at the Lake Wissota Studios, we have the curtains open. And I'm not sure if that's working or not for folks watching the video feed. So I was deferring to Luke here. If it's too washed out over on this side, well, if I look over at the cornfield, or, you know, do I have to find a new kind of TV makeup if I do that? You know, I have to think about the important things, Luke.
Wait, we're supposed to be wearing makeup on these shows?
Not you. There's an age range. Oh, okay. You're not there. You still have that baby face working. Whereas I have to hide decades of stress. So is this all right with the curtains open here?
Yeah, you can tell the natural light's coming in on that one side, but I don't think it's to a point where it's
the other reason that it was closed for the first 3 weeks of the show is, and I think I might have mentioned this once or twice, but there are several, like 3-4 different house major remodeling or construction projects going on our street, just quite coincidentally. And so there's been a lot of truck traffic, and I think things are starting to ease up now. At least I hope so. It has made the neighborhood much more fit. There now seems to be a neighborhood exercise program, more people walking up and down the street than ever before. Not that they want the exercise, but we're all a bunch of looky-loos. So we walk up and down and, you know, see what's happening with this house or that house and take it all in. Brewers managed to beat the Dodgers yesterday, split the series. And head to Wrigley this afternoon for a 3-game series, but then 3 more in LA against the Dodgers next week. We will talk a bit more about that. We will also tell you a bit more about a new way to listen to us live on an app or a website. If you're catching us by Facebook or Twitter and want something a little easier, or if you're listening in Wausau and can't always be on WXCO, we'll tell you more about how you can be part of the show later on. But first, just a few moments of some Wiscommon sense, as I like to think of it. You might recall a story that I told recently about how TV weathercasters have one forecast they should never be allowed to make, and that's the 50% chance of something, rain, snow, whatever. 50-50 is a coin flip. You and I can flip a coin. My message to meteorologists is take a stand. People are depending on you. Now, I get that weather isn't an exact science. And neither is polling. And in both cases, we have experts who try their best, and then we have to interpret what we can get out of their work. It might be guessing whether to have that picnic this weekend, or it might be guessing how an election is going to turn out. In the Marquette poll this week, we saw you know, the baseline numbers for Mandela Barnes with the lead over Ron Johnson. We saw that Governor Evers and Tim Michaels are in a statistical dead heat. And we saw a huge gap in issues as far as how Democrats and Republicans see the issues. And so we really have to read the tea leaves of the independents. And it makes you wonder, who are these independents? Well, first off, they're independents because they say so. Wisconsin does not require you to register with a party. So much like the weather, sometimes we just have to take our best guess as to what somebody is. People say they're independent because they're frustrated. They don't think that the politicians in either party are moderate enough for them. And I get that. Parties get a well-deserved rap. But they're also the only instruments we have in this particular democracy where like-minded people can rally around their values. Parties can be as narrow or broad as they want to be. The most obvious example of a narrow party is the Green Party and the environment. Unfortunately, right here, right now, with only two choices of parties that can actually win, we are letting each election fall to parties and candidates that not everyone falls in love with. But I can't emphasize this enough. On election day, it is a binary choice, D or R. You can vote elsewhere, or you can vote, you know, you can decide not to vote, but then you will have not had your vote used to its greatest potential by letting all the other D and R voters basically make the decision for you on our leaders. So on that day, and it's only 81 days away, do not say the choices are 50-50. Take a stand. People are depending on you. We'll be back with more after this. You're up north.
It's a beautiful morning.
I do not mean to rub it in if there's rain still in your part of the state, but it has cleared through here and it is gorgeous. The cornfield looks like it is a heavenly choir celebrating and extending to the heavens. If you want to sign up for our newsletter, and I hope you do, go to upnorthnewswi.com. Click on newsletter right there in the top banner, and you can subscribe there and find out what kinds of things I prattle on about after the show, about things that are happening primarily in state politics, but occasionally in national politics as well. And fortunately for us, the company doesn't have to entirely rely on me for national politics. We actually have people who know these things. Carolyn Fiddler is one of them. And she is in Pittsburgh at the Netroots Nation Convention and is joining us there. Carolyn, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, nice to have you. You
nice
have
to
a
be
busy
here.
You have a busy day ahead of you down there, so we'd better just start at the beginning and tell people what exactly Netroots Nation is, and is it basically start with that, and then I will completely malign it. So what is it?
Fair enough. Hi, I'm Carolyn Fiddler. Really happy to be here. And yes, happy to be here on the show and also really happy to be back at Netroots Nation. Netroots Nation's been around, this is its 17th year, although only its 15th as Netroots Nation. Netroots Nation actually started off as Yearly Kos, which a play on Daily Kos, which is the blog it's 20 years old now. But it started as a way for folks online to gather in real life and connect. And it quickly grew into the premier conference for progressives, and also into just a place for organizers to meet, activists, sort of career progressives, like people who work in the industry. Labor has always been a huge part of Netroots Nation, which as befits labor's role as a critical part of the underpinnings of the progressive movement. They've been an early sponsor. But this is, let's see, I have been, my first Netroots was in 2010.
Okay.
And I've missed two since then. So I've been to a lot of Netrootses.
And that has been what, as a presenter, a panelist, a speaker, or, you know, an attendee?
I don't think I've ever been when I wasn't on a panel or moderating a panel. Netroots is a collection of trainings and panels and keynotes with amazing progressives. And yeah, every year I've been here, I've been on at least one panel, and it's super fun because you get to talk about stuff that I get to talk about stuff that I love, like state politics, redistricting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are usually my panels, actually. Just yesterday, I was on a panel where a lot of tea was spilled. We talked about what went wrong in Virginia last year and lessons we can take away from it. Yeah, and a lot of activists were there. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of feelings were had. A lot of Virginians kind of worked out some ghosts from last year, and it was super fun. And then on Saturday, I am moderating a panel on misinformation in the media. So if anyone is here at Netroots, please come and join us at 3:15 on Saturday, Eastern time. Or if you're joining from home virtually, you can stream it. It's one of the featured panels. So so nice to be back. The last 2 years were virtual, which is mm-hmm. better than nothing, but not the same. So
not the same as getting everybody together. I saw that at the state Democratic convention this year as well. Now the part it sounds like I'm maligning it, but for people who aren't plugged in or just plugged in enough to know, they've heard of CPAC. They've heard mm-hmm. of the conservative conference that appears to be getting more wackadoodle each year. But yeah. maybe it had, you know, good intentions when it started out as activists. How much is there a parallel, and how much of it is A, no, this is a different group of people, and B, we're not wackadoodles?
Well, I guess wackadoodle is in the eye of the beholder to a point.
True.
I mean, at this point, conservatives look at a glass of water and they don't say half full or empty, or they're like, that's a dragon. Like, they're exactly. just completely divorced from reality in many levels. But this conference is definitely, you know, very far left, very liberal. To be here, you have to agree to a code of conduct, which involves respecting people's pronouns and personal space and bodily autonomy. There's a lot of respect, and if you don't behave yourself, you're asked to leave. It's very straightforward. Our credentials, let me reach for mine.
Sure.
Have things like you put a sticker on to let people know what pronoun you use, just to avoid any misunderstandings. We'd like to avoid those things. Mm-hmm. But these are hardcore progressives. There have been times when keynote speakers have been subject to protests from the audience. And sometimes it can get kind of harrowing.
Does that make it?
But that's part of the movement.
I hate to bring, you know, to reopen old wounds, but I mean, is this basically then just the Bernie contingent, and they would still to this day tell you, you know, Hillary Clinton shouldn't have been the nominee? Is it that?
No,
is it
not
still
at all.
That divisive?
No, not at all. In fact, I hope I'm not misremembering. I think actually Bernie was the object of one of those protests years back.
And that I totally understand. Yes.
Yeah, no, it's a mix of progressives. Like, okay. I consider myself more of a pragmatic progressive, but they're just like real hardcore liberals with whom I mostly agree, but maybe not on everything. And, you know, progressives are a big tent. And so we have multiple viewpoints here. And it makes for a really fun, interesting, diverse on every level conference. Like, okay, we are missing actual conservatives, but that's okay.
But there is that natural tension. I've certainly felt it after every election cycle, especially when it doesn't go well. And that is, you've got the people farther to the left saying the problem was the candidate wasn't bold enough and, you know, embrace its values. And of course, folks more in the center left say, well, you know, the candidate came off as too fire breathing and was too easily, you know, tarred as an extremist. And of course, there's never a right answer, especially when a candidate loses. And right. does that backdrop play out in the postmortem about Virginia governor's race, where Youngkin was the winner?
There's a little of that. Some people do consider they do believe that one of the Jennifers, state senator Jennifer McClellan, who was on the panel yesterday and had a lot of thoughts, obviously. She ran in the primary for Virginia governor, and Jennifer Carroll Foy, who was a member of the state House. People do think there is a school of thought, and which is completely fair, that like one of those candidates would have been more viable than Terry, would have performed better than Terry.
Terry McAuliffe, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay.
Very Virginia here.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Terry. But also, like, combined, the two Jennifers didn't pull half the vote share that Terry did in the primary, mm-hmm. Or didn't pull the vote. To combine, they didn't approach his vote share, I should say. But if you can't win a primary, it's hard to make the case that you're going to win a general. However, the primary was in June, and the landscape had definitely changed a lot between then and the general election in November. So I think there is a viable case to be made that one of the Jennifers would have performed better, or maybe just had a better campaign, because a lot of what we discussed in this panel was the failure of data modeling, polling. There were so many problems with that race that went on to affect down ticket races as well. Democrats lost the House of Delegates that year too, which sucked.
It did, but there is in that, again, that post-mortem that's done, there are factors that are just out of anybody's control. And when we're talking about a primary election, name ID still rules the roost, whether it's Terry McAuliffe, a former national chair, or as we learned, a couple of years back, Joe Biden in a big primary field, Tony Evers in a big primary field, and all of the organization in the world is still climbing a very tall mountain if the candidate with name ID has no glaring faults. And I think that's still a tough lesson, and I will call it a lesson. It's a tough lesson for newer or younger people involved in politics to grasp. It's that hatred of that saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know. But it works with voters too.
It does. It is important for sure. But Terry just didn't run a winning campaign on a lot of levels. So we had leaders of activist groups in Virginia there to talk a lot about their field work, what they were hearing on the doors. It's a really cool panel.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds like it. But I want to stick with the hand wringing for a minute here, because in Wisconsin, the most recent example of that for progressives mm-hmm. was when Brian Hagedorn won a state Supreme Court seat, and every poll indicated that he was going to lose. And the commercials, the messaging from the left was pretty merciless about one part of his right-wing background, which was supporting private schools that were extremely, anti-gay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And everybody thought he was a goner. Republicans thought he was a goner. And yet he won. And in the end, it turned out to be because that religious faction of voters got wind of that, really got active, and frankly surprised the rest of the state. So you just never know when you're talking about messaging, not just what's going to motivate your folks, but what is actually going to motivate some or all of the voters on the other side of the fence. And I don't know that there are many other examples like that, but again, there's so many things that are not in your control, and yet you have to try your best at gatherings like this anyway to try to figure them out.
It's true. And there was some postmortem hand-wringing in Virginia last year about critical race theory, CRT, and is that why Terry McAuliffe lost? But the conversation around education in schools was part of why he lost, because he just ceded that entire narrative to Youngkin. And Youngkin, there was some talk about CRT, but mostly Youngkin was tapping into frustration and anxiety that parents had after, a year at that point of having their kids home from school, doing school at home. And Terry said in a debate, it was an offhand comment that parents shouldn't have a say in either books or something, but he didn't mean it the way it came out, but
those offhand comments though, if that's not the wild card of all politics, a politician just said what he really was thinking, or slipped up and didn't quite convey what he or she was really thinking. And then again, all the plans, all the mm-hmm. data, everything just gets thrown right out the window sometimes.
Absolutely. And Terry took was 2 weeks at least to respond to that. He just let Youngkin run with it. And by the time he got around to trying to beat back that narrative, it was way too late. And then on, he was just responding to everything Youngkin was doing. He was not leading.
Wow, that is so reminiscent of the Swift boat attacks against John Kerry in 2004.
A little bit, yeah.
Where a lot of people behind the scenes were like, where is he? When's he going to say something? What? And you're thinking for the moment there, well, let's not give it more oxygen.
Right.
But on the other hand, if you don't respond at all, then the other side gets to run with it. It's, again, I don't know how you and others who do this for a living can do it, because there's so much that's out of your control, but you have to try your best.
Exactly. It's so true. And there were a lot of problems in campaigns in Virginia last year. So,
Well, we'll talk more about how this might apply to the Wisconsin races coming up after the break with Carolyn Fiddler, a national expert on state politics who now works with us at Courier Newsroom and for Up North News. She is at the Netroots Nation Convention in Pittsburgh. We will continue the conversation on the other side of this break. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're Up North.
Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Yes, we are totally going to celebrate the better weather over here in the western part of the state, because seasonal affective disorder, as we talked about the other day, is real, even in the summertime. Carolyn Fiddler joins us from what appears to be sunny Pittsburgh as well, and the Netroots Nation Convention of Progressive Activists. To get back to the convention itself and its roots, sorry, didn't mean to forgive the pun. But before it was Netroots, it was, again, aligned with a blog called Daily Kos, which launched 20 years ago to give very, very frustrated progressives an outlet in the wake of the 2000 presidential election, which, you know, remains in my mind downright criminal, and then the ramp up, you know, toward the Iraq War. And so you had this frustration with George W. Bush, Karl Rove, and all of his friends. And then you had, you know, years later, the joy of the Obama years. And then if you thought W was something, here comes Donald Trump. And now in the wake of that wreckage is the sense that, again, for everything that Trump has put us through, mm-hmm. and everything that's allegedly being investigated, mm-hmm. he still has not really faced justice for any of this. Does that lead to any kind of a sense of defeatism for the progressives that have had to endure Bush and then had to endure Trump? Or are these the bright, shiny people who are, you know, relentlessly upbeat and believe that you know, we're not done seeking justice when it comes to Trump and friends?
Definitely the latter. And these are folks who... these are progressives from all across the country, from very red states to very blue states. So we have progressives with every perspective in terms of they're tired because they just fight all the time, but they're still at it, to folks from California who are like, oh, we can do better even out here and be more progressive even. And that's actually, I'm glad you brought up Daily Kos's history, because Daily Kos has always been about more and better Democrats, like that they are an activist organization. They endorse candidates. And even sometimes in primaries, because, you know, in Texas, Cisneros was running against the last anti-abortion Democrat in Congress. And that was important to Daily Kos, so they endorsed her. Daily Kos has been around forever. Marcos, a lot of people don't realize, the guy who founded it, is a veteran, and he just vented his frustration about the Iraq War and everything around it, and that's how things got started. And
it was rather instrumental, yes, in giving, you know, when Bush and the others were really wrapping themselves up in the flag. I don't think at that point progressives, you know, coming out of the Bill Clinton years and everything from Vietnam, I don't think they had really found their post 9/11 voice yet. No. And this really helped, especially having a place where progressive veterans could say, yes, these are my values and I feel like I'm home. But now those values are under threat more than ever because of Trump and what he and others are doing to attack democracy. And that in the wake of everything that's been discovered, there are still so many people who are going along with the big lie. Let me get my very fancy computer printout scribbled here on the level of confidence that people have in the results of the 2020 presidential election. Overall, it's basically 66-33, 2-1 margin. People are confident in the election results. But among Republicans, it's almost flipped. 62-37 have some degree of a lack of confidence in the 2022 or in the 2020 election. So heading into 2022, it is unnerving to still see so many people embracing, an authoritarian, a wannabe strongman. Again, with that as the backdrop for this convention, how do you talk about reaching independent voters or even Republican voters who still haven't gone full blown big lie? What's the message to them about the importance of putting country before party?
Well, I mean, as you indicated, like a lot of those folks just can't be reached, and democracy really is under threat. And I wonder, the 6633 number, like people who are confident just generally across parties, what was that, for 8-12 years ago? Like, I like to think that believing in the results number was higher. Like, it's but we're in a really weird space now, and democracy really is under threat. And Netroots is reflecting that. A lot of, like, panels are submitted to Netroots, and they pick ones they want to have at their convention. And the panels this year are really centered around abortion and misinformation and fighting to preserve democracy. So that is a massive theme here. We haven't figured out the answer quite yet. But it's going to differ, depending on where you are. There's no sort of universal, I think, silver bullet here.
You talked about studying the defeat in Virginia, but I'm guessing there's been just as much discussion about the win in Kansas. That was such a surprise to folks. And yesterday, I want to say, was it Target Smart, the Democratic data firm, put out numbers that indicated that the gender gap in new registrations was amazing in Kansas. It was 40%, a 40% gap between new voters who are women versus men, followed by Idaho, followed by Wisconsin, number three on that list. So as I've said a few times, and probably will say more over the next 81 days, I don't think this issue of a right-wing Supreme Court repealing Roe v. Wade is a flash in the pan. It's motivating people.
It is. And I was actually skeptical about its potential impact on this election this year in 2022. But I'm delighted to be clearly proven wrong. It's really motivating people already. And I think it's only going to become a stronger motivator for women, for people who believe in women having bodily autonomy. Mm-hmm. Because people are going to die. Like, we're having stories already, like people being forced to carry their rapist babies to term. But we're going to have more of that. People are going to die. And we're going to have a lot of horror stories between now and 2024. And if we can preserve democracy that long, it's going to be a big motivator then, too.
One of the things that I think has been key is that those stories were frequently kind of kept in the shadows. People didn't want to talk about them. People didn't want to hear about them. And so I think a lot of people thought these stories were overblown, that it was all hyperbole. And it turns out that real stories from real people about real bad outcomes still has as much impact as ever.
Yes. I mean, people can relate. Like, everyone knows someone, everyone probably knows someone who's had an abortion, honestly. But that's, people are starting to talk about that more too, which is good. But everyone knows someone who's been sexually assaulted. Everyone knows someone who is impacted by something attached to the abortion conversation, if not an actual abortion itself. So this is a more universal issue than I think that Republicans bargained on. Republicans are the dog that caught the car here. They're trying to minimize it. They're like, oh, this really doesn't change anything. It's just moved it to the states. That is garbage. And everyone knows it.
True. So I'm thinking about what people would want to take away, not just from a single issue, but from this entirely, not just the people who are there, who will have their own takeaways, but those who are hearing about this, those who are starting to plug in. Again, they might be those who are newly registered to vote. What tips, tricks, resources, what is it that you could pass along to a layperson saying, well, I know you couldn't be there, but here's something to keep in mind as you're talking to your neighbors between now and November 8th?
Well, I'm a big believer in letting people know that they can help, that they can make a difference, have an impact. They're not powerless. And so a big theme of Netroots Nation is empowering voters, and empowering progressives, empowering marginalized communities. So that's always a huge takeaway from Netroots, and it's more important now than ever. People need to know that they, you know, voting matters. It makes a huge difference, and they need to vote all the way down the ticket. Netroots has always had a really good focus on those down ticket races, attorneys general, secretaries of state, state ledge, things like that, things where that very, very directly impact whether or not someone can get an abortion. And all that stuff's on the ballot this fall.
So you have made much of your work is done in following state level politics, you know, nationally. So you're looking at multiple states, and it's where we're, you know, so thankful to have you at Courier now to be doing that for us, as we're in multiple states. I've talked to our colleagues, obviously, in some of the other big states this year, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, and of course, Wisconsin as well. Not that I'm not asking to make predictions up and down the line. What I'm asking is, as you look at this from a state level, do you think there's going to be similar outcomes in these and other states? Or do you think it's very much going to be a checkerboard and things might go one way in, you know, Michigan, but wildly the other way in Arizona? So are we seeing a national trend, or is each state pretty much on their own?
Each state is not on their own, although obviously each state has its very distinct political personality. But I think statewide, Democrats are going to do better, because a lot of people, I feel like not enough people are talking about this, but this is the first election cycle after this most recent round of redistricting, and Republicans controlled it in most states. So down ballot stuff, U.S. House and state ledge is an uphill ice skating endeavor, basically. So it was always going to be a tough election for Democrats and those races, because Republicans got to draw the seats the way they wanted again. So, but then in places like Michigan, which you mentioned, they had an independent redistricting commission, a good one, not to be confused with Virginia's, which was a bad one. Mm-hmm. So maps there are looking a lot better, a lot more fair than they have in decades, which is a very nice change of pace. And so it's going to be a real mixed bag. It's not going to be good or bad for one party everywhere, for sure. But things are certainly not as bad for Democrats as they could be.
I'm hearing a sense of tempering expectations, because, again, it looks like Democrats are not going to do nearly as poorly as was thought, you know, about 4, 5, 6 months ago. But I know, for example, when I was elected to the legislature in 2006, I mean, that was a wave year. I mean, so many people were sick of Bush, and Democrats won legislative seats that hadn't been won in 80 to 100 years.
Yeah.
And no, I know people are thinking, oh, well, that just needs to happen again. But the maps look nothing like 2006.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Because in 2010, Republicans controlled even more of the redistricting process than they do now somehow. Mm-hmm. And and then the 2012 election was savage. I like to talk about election night 2010 as the longest election night of my life, with apologies to people who are still scarred from 2016. I get that. But watching those legislative chambers fall one by one by one, and knowing what that meant for the next decade in U.S. House races and state legislative races, was just so depressing. And people finally caught on 2 years later in 2012, when Obama won re-election and Democrats got, what, 3 million more votes for U.S. House seats, and yet still came in many seats under Republican, like in a minority, a healthy minority, to be honest, despite getting more votes.
I would direct anybody, and I don't have a link to offer, but and again, I say this as somebody scarred from being caught up in the 2010 shellacking, look up what Samantha Bee on her show Full Frontal did. I don't remember when she did it, but she looked back at 2010 and basically told America, you really messed up by staying home in 2010 like you did. It carried impact that, you know, is still with us today. To wrap things up, again, not to put you on the spot, I will simply say the new polling, both Marquette and Fox News show Mandela Barnes with a lead, and the governor's race is tight. Do you see a lot of motion in that over the next 80 days? Do you see this as a trend that might just stay flat, or are you refusing to put yourself on the record in any way, shape, or form?
oh, I'm not going to refuse to put myself on the record. This is an honest conversation. I'm just going to say what I think. And no one's ever accused me of being a political optimist. I got my start in Virginia politics in 2000, and you're not an optimist when you do that.
Well, good. But, you got 10 seconds to tell me how it's going to go then.
I think trends are moving towards Democrats. It's not dispositive. We could still lose, but it's looking better than it was.
There you go. I'll take that. Carolyn Fidler, thanks so much. Enjoyed the conference. We'll talk to you on the other side.
Thank you.
All right. We'll be back to wrap up this hour's conversation next. You're up north. Day tripping this weekend. Hope the conditions are great for you and you have a wonderful time. We do a series at Up North News about various day trips that you can take road tripping around Wisconsin. Our most recent one is Mineral Point. I am editing a story right now on Ashland, a fantastic place to go for the weekend, and hope to get that posted on our website, upnorthnewswi.com, in the next couple of days. I was looking for more information about Netroots Nation going on in Pittsburgh, and from Pittsburgh Public Radio is an article that kind of previews it, just to tell you a bit more about it. I don't know if Carolyn Fidler and I gave you enough background, but you know, it is a case of, in the words of Pennsylvania State Representative Austin Davis, who's also the Democratic candidate for lieutenant governor this year, he says the key here is that progressives win by, quote, elevating the voices of the people who are on the ground. I say this in my speeches all the time. The people who are closest to the pain should be closest to the power. And I think we got that sense last week from Angela Lang with Block as well. So Netroots Nation this year has about 140 panel discussions, workshops, and other events. And for those of you who are not fans of progressives and are hate listening to this show, I want to give you some food for thought that, yes, of the 140 events, they include some yoga sessions. So I just want you to picture a bunch of, you know, Birkenstock wearing, hemp basket weaving, granola munching yoga fans. And they're not all like that. That's a stereotype, but I have to give the haters a little something to, you know, to play with as well. The gathering has all kinds of speakers, as you can imagine, high profile progressives that include Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. And I mention her specifically because, gee, you're going to be surprised about this, but one of the first attack ads against Mandela Barnes links him to the squad, to Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and others who, you know, these are scary people. And I can't tell you how many tweets in response to it simply said, wouldn't it have been easier just to call Mandela Barnes black? Because that's really what you're trying to say here, isn't it? Is to tie to something that, you know, you don't like, not just that you don't agree with. But Ilhan Omar is not going anywhere. She is somebody who has become a fearless leader in her community, AOC as well. And they have been the people closest to the pain. So it's no wonder they are now being elected to positions where they are closer to the power. So as all these people meet each other, work on movement building, work on organizations, you know, Barack Obama was dismissed in 2008 as a community organizer. And then you look at what happened. It's because he was plugged in to people. He was plugged into people in pain. And that's not to say that, you know, not everybody has a level of pain. Everybody has a level of angst. I have said to more candidates and more gatherings to people that if you want to make a connection with somebody who might not agree with you politically, the very first thing you have to do is acknowledge their pain, acknowledge their angst. Yeah, we mocked Bill Clinton for saying in 1992, I feel your pain, but he was absolutely right. It's the first thing. We can talk all day about, you know, let's say white privilege, you know, the privilege that somebody has, or male privilege or whatnot. Completely true. But they also have issues. They also have fears. They have worries. And if you start any conversation with anybody, just attacking them or dismissing them, you're not going to make any progress. That only works on some inalienable subjects like, racism, for example. But by and large, people who disagree with you are not setting out to hate you. They simply have their own pain and their own difficulties, and they're looking for somebody who will listen to them, somebody who will acknowledge what they're going through, and then promise not to forget them when they get elected. I certainly heard that from, well-to-do folks living in, nice homes in the city of Eau Claire, and from people who lived out on dirt roads in Clark County who had never had a candidate come there before to ask them for their vote. And it's not difficult to A, listen, and B, not forget them once you get in, to fight not only for, good school aides for districts like Eau Claire, but to fight to make sure that you're increasing transportation aid to a rural school district as it gets more and more expensive to run the school buses, from farm to farm. These are not tough things. And community organizers, what they do, or what they're trained to do, is a lot like we talked about with Robert Craig from Citizen Action recently. Get out there, knock on some doors, listen to people. And then once you have that conversation going, there's a fairly good chance, better than before, that they will then listen to you and understand that you are offering something that may be a solution. It may be something they disagree with, but in an earnest conversation, what you're really looking for is that acknowledgement that they don't necessarily agree with you, but they also don't think you're lying to them. So when you've built that kind of a base for a relationship, you may not win their vote, in that first conversation, but at least you've started something and you can build on that. And I believe there's a lot of that happening at Netroots Nation as they go out and come back home, rather, and train other people to do the work that they have done so well. I would contrast that to, as I mentioned early in the conversation with Carolyn, CPAC, which is the right-wing activist convention. And the moves that they're taking, not now just toward embracing authoritarianism and fascism, but in some ways outright encouraging it. And it is not hyperbole. It is not alarmist. It is real. Those are the conversations that are being had. Those are the plans that are being made. And the only way they succeed is, in fact, by lying to those same voters and making promises to alleviate their pain that they have no intention of keeping once they get into power. When we come back in our next hour, we will finally have the definitive conversation about what in God's name constitutes a dad shirt versus a Hawaiian shirt or a bowling shirt. I didn't even know there was a such thing as a camp collar, but that's the key. Details next. You're up north.